Session number 22344, Reel 2.
Major Grace, Reel 2. What happened to you once you got back to the Cameron Highlanders at Inverness?
Yes, straight away I was put on a course to be a signals officer, and I thought at first that this was a prelude to be sent to Catterick to become a signals officer. And so that, by now is the middle of the winter, bitterly cold but bright and sunny, very little sunshine of course being so north, but I thought being a signals officer was a very good idea. So I'd learnt the Morse code pretty well and that sort of thing. And then quite unexpectedly, I and one or two others asked to see the colonel. He said, "Oh, I'm afraid you're leaving us. You and others are going to the Liverpool Scottish down in Boroughbridge in Yorkshire at that time."
What did you learn on the signals course? You mentioned the Morse code. What were the primary means of signalling that you were taught at that time?
Well, of course, there was the 15 radio set. That was the main means of communication, together with various other more rudimentary things. But it was mainly based on the radio. But of course, the radio signals were very limited on a 15 set, only a number of miles, so it wasn't a marvel. And of course, also in those days, a 15 set was very heavy and cumbersome, and it broke down very easily and had to be carried on the back, as you know, of one poor chap. So it was a bit rudimentary, certainly compared with communications today.
What about line communication? Did you learn about that?
A certain amount, but not an awful lot, really.
Was the 15 set limited at that time to communication in Morse, or could you use plain speech?
Oh, you could use speech, yes, you could do. But there again, it was very garbled and very difficult to understand if a lot of atmospherics came in, which they often did. It depends on the ground, what sort of... say if a big hill came between you and you're speaking to it, very greatly interrupt with atmospherics and fading in, fading out. So it was not at all a good system.
What about visual means of signalling? Did you learn lamp and semaphore and other traditional?
No, we didn't.
How long was your course as RSO?
Well, you see, I never went to Catterick.
So you didn't?
I never really... I was never included, you see, in the overall duties of a signals officer. So there was a lot that I would certainly have to learn, which I hadn't learned, by the time I got to Catterick. But, so really, my experience as a signals officer was extremely basic.
You're just doing the preliminary stages.
Yes, it was mainly to intensely learn the Morse code. the Morse code as quickly as possible, both by flag and by electric.
And the key.
Key, yes.
Were you doing that within the battalion before?
Yes.
Who taught you?
An NCO, a corporal, who was. Presumably a regular in the signals.
Was that going on in Inverness?
Yes.
Do you remember what sort of speed you got up to for your Morse?
Well, a reasonable speed, certainly not as fast as one would need in real practice, but I got quite efficient on it without being fast enough. But I could read the messages that came in fairly well and send out, yes.
When you joined the 2nd Liverpool Scottish, how did you find them? How did they compare to the Cameron Highlanders?
Well, they were very much TA orientated. All the regulars had been territorial officers, and as such, they were rather, should we say, selective. And I felt rather a bit of an outsider when I went, because A, I had no connection with Liverpool, and the accent was quite different. It's very much a Liverpool-based accent from practically everyone. And it was all rather elitism to begin with. So I gradually sort of fitted in, but certainly I felt rather an outsider to begin with. And I think one or two of the others who'd come down with me, they felt the same.
How long did it take, that process of being accepted by the...
Well, it was something very gradual, I should think, about 3 months or so. But you can't put a definite time on it. You gradually made friends. But I mean, one doesn't normally make friends just overnight. It happens very, very gradually as you gradually get to know people.
How did you get on with your platoon? I'm presuming you were given a platoon
I was. Nothing to do with signals, just an ordinary platoon.
Commander.
Quite well. I tried to get to know the men, but after a bit, I was made an administration officer, so I was dragged away from my platoon and brought into battalion headquarters.
What sort of men were they? Were they all territorials, or was that a mixture by that stage?
Well, in my platoon, they were all a mixture of conscripts, really. So it was the officers who were the TA chaps.
Where did the conscripts come from? Were they Liverpudlians?
Mainly, yes. Nearly all of them, yes.
And how long do you think it took you to establish a rapport with them?
With the men in my platoon?
Yes.
I think almost in a week or two. I think they accepted me, and I tried to get to know them individually as quickly as I could. I got on well with the platoon sergeant.
That's a critical step, isn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, absolutely.
Was he a regular, or was he a conscript?
I think he was a regular, I think. He was pretty good.
Do you know what regiment he was from originally?
I think he was in the same regiment. Mm. I don't think he'd been in any other beforehand.
What sort of training were you doing with the platoon when you were leading them?
Not an awful lot of training, because after a bit... We did a battle course.
Yes,
battle course. But we took turns, of course, to be sent on this course, one or two officers at a time. And that was pretty tough, with live ammunition.
Where did that take place?
I can't remember. It was right in the country, so I can't... But it was fairly near Boroughbridge, where we were actually stationed, you see. So it was in the neighbourhood of Boroughbridge.
What did you actually do on the battle course? What were the activities that
you did? Well, a lot of attacking at platoon level with live ammunition, and which also, of course, involved learning defence, and a lot of physical training going over these assault courses. The assault course was very tough if you weren't used to it, which presumably you weren't if you're first going, and weapon training and firing on the range. So it was quite an intensive course. Can't remember how many weeks it lasted now. I expect you know more than I do about that.
From time to time, things varied.
Yes, of course.
Programs varied.
Well, anyway, that was part of the training we did. And then we went on quite big exercises. We did one exercise called dry shod, which was at divisional level.
What did that entail doing at your level, at platoon commander level?
It wasn't terribly exciting, really, because it was mainly, I think, an exercise for the command rather than the individual soldier. But we did the usual sort of battalion attacks, course, then naturally the platoons were involved. But I think it was mainly working out how the division was going to work as a division. So that was the emphasis on Dryshod.
What sort of ground were you going over?
Well, just sort of north of England, fields, scrubland, moorland.
What's the emphasis on the attack or on the defence when you were doing Dryshod?
On attack, I think, the emphasis, yes, I think so.
So would you be doing advanced contact and attack?
Yeah, yes, that's right.
Was it opposed? Was there an enemy?
There was a sort of a basic enemy, and there were lots of masses of umpires milling round. Sometimes there were more umpires than there were enemy.
Was the exercise primarily movement on foot, or was it?
Yes, on foot. Oh, well, of course, up to a point, because as far as we're concerned, it was on foot, but there was quite a lot of movement concerned with supply and bringing up rations and all the rest of it. So it was quite realistic from a divisional point of view.
They were practicing the logistics as well as the tactics.
Yes, it must have been, yes.
And how was it that you got transferred to administrative officer? Do you know why that happened?
Yes. Well, I think really to do that we have to come down to Eastbourne.
Oh, right.
We came down by a motor convoy, and that was the most appalling shambles because it was all done in the dark. I think it was a moonless night, and they weren't allowed to have headlights on. It was meant to be a very realistic sort of movement, and everyone got lost. Vehicles were in the ditch, they lost their way, some went this way, some went that, and it was the biggest horlicks, I think, I remember, of the entire war. But oddly enough, it just so happened that I knew the way perfectly, because I'd been down here quite a lot, and I knew all the main roads, and so I sailed blithely on in my 1500 weight truck, and I was the first vehicle to arrive out of the entire division. And I think I rather got hauled over the coals. Why did you arrive? Why were you separated from the rest of us? And I think I just said, well, I knew this is the way to go, so I just went it. However, that's rather a deviating story, isn't it? When I got to Eastbourne, again, I knew one or two of the residents from before the war, before they were properly evacuated, and I organised a little concert, and somehow the colonel got to hear of this, and he sort of said, oh, he read about it in the local paper, which was still operating in those days. He read about, well, if you can organise this concert, you better come and organise something at headquarters. So he did. And as it happened, I organised in the Devonshire Park Theatre quite a big review, of which all kinds of people did various turns, and the pipe band came and played and so on. And the brigadier came, and all the officers came, and quite a lot of the few residents left in Eastbourne. And that was a great success. It was called the Vive Review. And as a result of that, they thought I'd better go on being the administrative officer.
It was often said that when you were at Cambly, the most important thing you could do to advance your career was to organise the Christmas panto.
Oh, really? Well, this is a good example of that, then.
What were the duties of administrative officer in Italian headquarters?
Well, sort of looking after the supplies, seeing that the various companies were organising with each other and
coordinating their
General coordination, acting in liaison with the adjutant, which incidentally that very useful to me much later when I became an adjutant, and then I think that came to an end when I left there and joined Gordon's.
What sort of chap was the adjutant? You mentioned that the Liverpool Scottish were elitist in their
origins. Yes, he was definitely one of those. Mm. And the colonel was and the second in command were very much leading businessmen in Liverpool, and so anyone who wasn't very well off in their particular sphere and leaders of this and that in Liverpool, they didn't really fit in very well.
Did you get on all right with them by the time you...
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, certainly. By that time, I fitted in perfectly all right.
It sounds as though what you were doing was, in fact, a form of staff work.
Yeah, it was, really. Yes, I tried. Yeah. Sort of at a very junior level. Yes.
What did you prefer doing? Did you prefer the platoon commanding, or did you prefer the...
Well, I must say, especially doing the concerts and that sort of thing, I've very much enjoyed. But it wasn't until I got to the Gordons that I really appreciated being a platoon commander.
Do you know why it was you were transferred to the Gordons?
All I can say is that there were three other Cameron officers who were, but quite what led them to choose me and the other three, I can't tell you, no.
So you'd been with the Liverpool Scottish about just under a year.
Yes.
Could it be that you were being moved around to broaden your experience?
Yes, could be, yes.
So you're right at the Gordons, 6th Battalion of the Gordons at Swaffham.
That's right. Well, you know all these things well in advance.
what sort of outfit were they compared to the Liverpool Scottish and the Camerons?
They were very different. It was, of course, a Scottish. We're back to Scotland again, back to Scottish jocks, which I appreciated. I enjoyed being with them much more than being with the Liverpool chaps, and. I was made immediately very welcome by the new company commander, and I was given a platoon, and I got on very well with them right from the start. Had a marvellous sergeant, a couple of good corporals, and we started intense training straight away. When we were at Strophen, one of the main things we did was combined ops with tanks. And this really was something that virtually saved our lives later on. And as you can imagine, to cooperate with tanks is quite something specialised, because obviously the tank commander might not be able to be in his turret. And so you wouldn't be able to communicate well with the tanks unless you knew exactly what they were going to do and they knew how you were going to cooperate. So we had one or two wonderful attacks, with tanks against an imaginary enemy, and that really was extremely very tactical and very important.
Do you remember which regiments you were training with, which tank regiments you were training with?
Oh, no. No, I can't remember now. I might have known at the time, but I don't remember now, no.
What sort of tanks were they? Were they designed specifically for supporting infantry? Were they?
Yes, they were light tanks.
Light tanks?
Yes. I can't remember the actual number of tons. Mm. I know there was one kind of tank, a 22-tonner, which was very light tank and quite mobile. Mm. I can't remember really much about how the tanks were.
When you were doing, when you were training for attacking with the tanks, how would you actually be combined with them? How would the tanks and infantry be laid out?
There again, it's a little vague after more than 50 years, as you can guess. But what I do remember is that we go forward in leaps and bounds. Mm. The tank would go forward, and then I think half, it's on a platoon level, So, say, one section would go on the right of the tank, another section on the left, and so we would go forward in rather crab-like leaps and bounds, and the firing, of course, that's another important thing, so that we would coordinate our rifle fire and Bren fire with the fire of the tanks. And so that was all worked out well in advance and practiced.
What about the third section in the platoon? Where would they be?
I think it was a case of alternating. So they would, the third section would be the next one to leap forward, going through the first leading section. The third would go in place of the second and that sort of thing.
They'd be leapfrogging then?
Yes, yes.
When they were advancing to contact with the tank, would the section be in line or would they be in file normally?
In line, I think.
So they'd be spread out either side of the tank?
Yes, yeah. But I think that must vary according to the lie of the land and also where the enemy is. So there again, it must be flexible, and that's up to the platoon commander to decide. So I don't think I could say every time it's this or that. You must decide on the ground.
What sort of ground were you training over? Do you remember the terrain?
Rather open.
Open?
Yes, undulating, but with very little foliage, trees or shrubs.
What sort of speed could you maintain if you were cooperating with tanks when you were going forward?
Fairly good, because as each section advanced, it would be at the double. So we went pretty fast. That in fact, in the training, they did actually do the same exercise over several times and time it.
So you were working up?
Working up to speed and making sure that your firepower was maintained at the same time as going as fast as you possibly could in the circumstances.
What sort of distances would you cover in an attack?
Well, in during the training, I suppose about a quarter of a mile say half a mile at a time.
Because if you're doubling, I mean, you can't keep that up forever, can you?
That's right. No, I think probably about half a mile per exercise.
How could you communicate with the tank when you were doing such a... Oh,
I can't remember.
I mean, eventually many tanks had a telephone on the back of the turret.
Yes.
I mean, did you work out a system of field signs? And
if you asked me that question perhaps 30 years ago, I would have remembered. Yeah. But obviously, occasionally, the tank commander would pop up in his turret. Mm. But not always, because, of course, he'd be shot. Notionally, he'd be shot down if he did that. So there must have been some... Either that or there was no communication and it was all done by rote, as you might say, planned how it was to be done beforehand.
By battle drills?
By battle drill.
Where would you normally be? Where would the platoon commander be in such an attack? Would you be riding on the tank or would you be on...
No, on foot, very much so. I think probably with the third section... Mm. Which then, of course, in its leaps forward, would become the first section.
Yes.
So I could still keep in touch with the three sections, though.
Mm. Now, you said that you like being back with the jocks once you joined the Sixth Gordons. What were these jocks? Were they conscript or regular or territorial? Do you know what their origins were?
They were mostly conscript. I think there were a few... I don't think there are any regular soldiers, so there were perhaps a few volunteers, but mainly conscripts, and they all came from the area, Banffshire, Aberdeen, round Peterhead, all those. So it was a very localised battalion.
What was their level of training when you joined them?
It was pretty good, yes. I'd say... considerably better than the Liverpool Scottish had been. And they were all very fit. and well trained with their weapons. So and they were enthusiastic, they were fit. So I was very, very pleased with them all together.
You mentioned in your biographical information sheet that you were training for abroad. What was that?
Well, we didn't know where we were going.
But did you know you were going abroad?
Oh, yes. So we were definitely training to be, because we knew that after a certain time we'd be going on embarkation leave and then we'd be going somewhere.
Yes.
It might have been Iceland, it might have been the tropics.
And you didn't know?
No.
So you couldn't do any specific training for...
Well, no, and then after this tank training, then we went up to the western coast of Scotland.
Yes.
And did combined ops with the Navy.
What did you learn when you were doing that?
Well, it was a landing craft, and all the business about being in the troop ship and then going down the side, going into the what you call them, the landing craft, and then making the assault, jumping into the water and ready to fight against the defending troops on land.
Would these landing craft be... How many men would you get in them, the landing craft that delivered you to the shoreline?
I think only about one platoon per... They're quite small. I think about 30 men plus a couple of crew.
So these would be the landing craft assault?
Yes, yes, that's right, yes.
Do you know how many landings you did from those while you were doing this training with the Navy?
Oh, it's all so vague now. I couldn't put a number to it. Well, we over and over again, shall we say, but I couldn't put an actual number on it, no.
How did the jocks take to this?
Oh, we all hated it because it was right in the middle of the winter. There was mud, rain everywhere, and then, of course, getting wet in the landing. It was a horrible business altogether.
So you're doing assault landings in the middle of winter on the west coast of Scotland.
Yes,
that
horrible.
Very rigorous.
Exactly, yes.
Did you suffer any injuries during that training?
I don't remember anyone suffering. There might have been something minor, but no real serious injury, no.
What sort of scale were you doing? Were you doing this at battalion level?
Oh, yes, battalion level, yes.
Once you'd done a landing, did you then have to carry on the movement inland?
Yes, up to a point, yes. But it was mainly on the actual landing. Once we'd, so to speak, established a basic beachhead, then I think the exercise was more or less finished. And we started again later on do another one.
How did you get on with the Navy?
Well, it was... A lot of it was in the dark.
Yes.
We really hardly saw the Navy as individuals at all. I mean, from a tactical liaison point of view, presumably it was pretty good, but as on an individual level, not at all.
There's no real contact.
No, not really.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how long that took, that training in combined ops?
I think about a month. Mm. Yes, quite a long time. I suppose we did other things as well.
And then I think you must have had your embarkation leave.
That's right.
But what did you do when you were on leave?
Well, just sort of all the family got together. And I think my sister, who was in the WAF, no, she was in the Fannies. She managed to get leave, so fortunately we were a family at home for a week. And we just sort of remained as a family. We saw a few friends and that's all.
You embarked January 1943. Did you know where you were going when you embarked?
Not to begin with. It wasn't until we actually left Liverpool in the lovely...